Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Brait Full Year 2023 Results Presentation. All participants are currently in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. Participants on the webcast may submit their questions in the question box at the bottom of the page. If you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Also note that this event is being recorded. I will now hand the conference over to Mr. Peter Hayward-Butt. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Chris, and thanks very much to all our stakeholders for taking the time this morning. From a perspective of the presentation, we'll give a brief overview of how the portfolio has performed and then do a deep dive into the Brait NAV and the movements within that, and then do a relatively detailed look at both Premier, well, Virgin Active and New Look, discuss the valuations at the end, and then have a recap on the Brait strategy. In terms of the overview of the portfolio, I think everyone understands out there it has been a relatively difficult year from an operating environment perspective. And in that context, I think it's relatively pleasing that, you know, all three, you know, of our portfolio companies performed, I think, pretty strongly during the last 12 months from a number of perspectives. We'll go into a bit more detail on that. I'm touching on Virgin, you know, at the top of the page. Relatively strong performance over the last 6 months and importantly across all key territories. So it wasn't one or two territories that performed well. Again, we'll go into some detail on that later. The active membership base across the group grew by 14% from about 843,000 members up all the way up to 963, so just under a million members over the last 12 months. And very pleasingly, for the first time since COVID, the average yield increased 4% year on year, which overall resulted in a 23% growth in revenue year on year, despite what has been relatively difficult environments in some of the countries which we operate in. The new operating model and structure was discussed in Dean's presentation, where he presented to investors probably just over a month or so ago, and positioned Virgin Active as moving towards being a global wellness company. So I won't repeat all of what Dean said in his presentation, but I think management has done a great job, you know, of refocusing the group, looking at things differently and looking at what this group should look like over the next 2 to 3 years to position it as a global wellness company. With respect to the international business, which performed really well, that gave us the ability to amend and extend the current debt terms in the international business. That was one of the issues that was of concern to us, and I'm sure to investors. We had a tenor that led to, I think it was June 2025, we've extended the debt terms to June 2027, the agreement of all lenders, well, the majority of the lenders, which has been very pleasing, all on exactly, just about exactly the same terms. All covenants have been moved out, which really does give this group, the international business, the ability to grow into the EBITDA it needs to. So that was very pleasing. And I think, as Dean alluded to in his presentation, there are a number of growth initiatives in the business, which, if we want to get this business ready for a listing in the next 18 months or so, you know, we need to invest in now. And the existing shareholders have agreed to inject a further £50 million of equity at the current valuation. Very importantly, our valuation that we have in the books, another £50 million of equity to fund some of those growth initiatives which Dean and his team are looking to invest behind. From a Premier perspective, again, you know, another year of extremely strong performance, both again on an absolute and a relative basis. EBITDA year on year was up 16% to just over 1.7 billion rand, largely driven by the Millbake business, which increased its EBITDA by 17%. But some of the other businesses other than the Mozambican business also performed relatively well. And again, we'll touch on that in a bit more detail. Very pleasingly, you know, over the last 3 years, but probably going back even further than that, the business has continued to invest in its asset base, which I think has given it a massive competitive advantage. And very pleasingly, whilst it's continued to do that, its ROIC has still continued to increase. It's grown from 9% 3 years ago. This year, it had an ROIC of over 19% versus its target of somewhere between 16 and 19%. And I think, as Fritz alluded to in the presentation he gave last week when Premier put its results out, you know, we wouldn't want to forego investment opportunities. So I think we are currently in the sweet spot in terms of return on invested capital, so somewhere between 16 and 19%. And again, credit to the management team for doing so. I think that leaves the business with an extremely well-invested bread business in particular, gives it a massive competitive advantage. The new Pretoria bakery has continued to perform well, and we've seen market share growth in the inland region, which was a region where Premier was massively underrepresented historically. A successful listing of Premier in March 2023, I think we were one of, and I'm going to say, eight companies globally that managed to pull off a listing in the first quarter. So very difficult market conditions, but credit to the management team, and we are very appreciative of the investors that came into that listing. We raised 3.6 billion rand as Brait as part of that listing, which in combination with the 924 million capital distribution pre the IPO gave us a return of just under 4.6 billion rand to Brait. From a new look perspective, again, a relatively solid performance in what has been a very, very difficult market conditions in the UK fashion industry. Anyone who follows that sector will know just how difficult it's been. I definitely think New Look has been one of the outperformers relative to some of its competitors. Again, we'll touch on that both from a market share and a profitability perspective. EBITDA grew 68% year on year to £42 million, which was driven particularly in the earlier part of the year by increased footfall, but I think also very importantly, cost management, both at the center and also in the distribution centers of the business. There's a continued focus on group operating costs. Management have identified somewhere between £10 and £15 million of cost efficiencies that are likely to continue to come out of the center and the distribution centers. And those improving efficiencies should help continue to drive growth in EBITDA for this current year. So from a Brait perspective, it really has been a transformational year. I think if you go back 3 years or so, Brait had an RCF of just over 7 billion rand when Ethos stepped into the shoes. And I think this year we finally fully paid that off. Over the last 3 years, there's been 7.9 billion rand of disposal proceeds raised, much of which has gone to reducing that revolving credit facility. And certainly for the first time in a long time, or certainly the first time ever since I've sat in the chair as a team here, we are sitting on cash as opposed to having a massive revolving credit facility that we need to pay off. So having paid off that 3 billion rand RCF year on year, that will result in about 360 million rand of interest cost savings on the revolving credit facility per annum. The focus remains on positioning the various assets for exit, both across New Look, which we would hope to exit over the next 18 months, getting Virgin Active into a place where it can be unbundled and listed and given to our shareholders, and obviously continue to see, you know, how Premier continues to grow so that, again, in time, we would potentially unbundle those shares to the Brait shareholders. Just moving over quickly to the Brait NAV, you know, on a year-on-year basis, so comparing March 22 to March 2023, obviously you will see, you know, a relatively big decrease in the valuation of Premier. That's no great surprise. We've moved from having 97% of that company down to owning 47% of that company. So that really reflects the IPO process that was run. From a Virgin Active perspective, again, we'll go into more detail on the valuation. Overall, in pounds, it was slightly down year on year, broadly flat. There's been a significant depreciation around 15% in the pound rand, which has increased the valuation in rand terms by 763 million. But as I mentioned, broadly flat, and we've kept the valuation methodology exactly the same year on year. Similarly with New Look, the valuation relatively flat year on year, slightly boosted by the £9 million that we invested in that business as part of the capital raise during the year and was injected as equity, and also from the perspective of the fact that the rand depreciation has led to an increase in the valuation of that asset year on year. 3.6 billion rand of cash that sat in the books as at the 31st of March. Those are largely the proceeds of the listing. As we mentioned, we raised 3.6 billion. We hadn't received ExCon approval to repay the RCF at that point, but literally, I think within a week of that date, the RCF was repaid. And so the borrowings that you see below that of 2.054 billion, which is the RCF, was fully repaid in the second week of April. And the convertible bonds and the Brait exchangeable bonds, as you can see there, the increase in those largely driven by two things. Firstly, the FX movement, which I referred to earlier. The Brait convertible bonds are at pound-based. It's £150 million. So the 15% decrease in the value of the rand increased the rand liability. So it didn't obviously increase in pounds, but it increased in rands. and the other is on accounting treatment. We'll talk a bit about that later, IAS 32 accounting treatment. There's an element of both the convertible bond and the exchangeable bond that is held as equity. It's an accounting treatment which, as you move towards maturity, narrows over time, and you effectively move closer and closer to the par value of that instrument. So those two together accounted for 664 million of the decrease in NAV, the accounting treatment and the FX movement. From an NAV per share perspective, it decreased from 837 to 706, and on a fully, which was a 16% decrease, on a fully diluted basis, assuming that the exchangeable bond had converted, the 669 as at March 22 reduced by 11% to 593. Just trying to unpack that for, you know, for our investors, there's really three buckets of NAV movement. The first is the impact of realizations. Those are assets that we've sold during the last 12 months and obviously received cash for. The second bucket is unrealized valuation movements. So what are the assets that we currently hold and what are the values of those? And the other really revolves around the debt and the operating costs. So just touching on that briefly, as at March, the NAV was 11053, as you will see from the previous page. If you look at the impact of realizations during the last 12 months, we sold a 50-odd percent stake in Premier. That's the 4695 that you see as a reduction. What did we receive? We received proceeds of 3.6 plus the distribution, capital distribution of about 924. The combination of those is about 4.5 billion. We sold the Consol stake for 400 and received proceeds of around 425. So overall, the impact of the realizations was broadly flat year on year, down 194, as you see at the top of the page, between the Premier stake sold and the Consol stake sold. Moving on to the second bucket, which is unrealized valuation movements. The Premier valuation reduction really reflects the fact that we valued the business at 7.6 times historic or LTM EBITDA. The valuation of the IPO was done at just under 54 Rand a share. And as at the 31st of March, the listed price had increased from 54 Rand to 60, where this business is valued in our books. So there was a decrease in the valuation of the Premier business over the past 12 months, largely reflective of the listing price or where it was listed as at the 31st of March. From a Virgin Active perspective, the valuation is up 763, as I mentioned before, probably slightly flat or to down in pound terms, but in rand terms, up. There was just under a billion rand of valuation adjustments based on the FX movement over the last 12 months. Again, from a New Look perspective, the net increase after the £9 million that we injected into the business was around 77 million. Again, probably more reflective of the fact of depreciation in the rand than any increase in the valuation of that company. On the right-hand side, just to then talk about the rest of the NAV reduction, which is about 1.443 billion, there's really two buckets to it. The first is accounting and FX impact. The accounting adjustment, which is effectively that IAS accounting treatment. Now, I'm an agricultural economist, so don't get me started on accounting treatment, but effectively what this is there's a component part of the bonds that is held as equity and a part of that is debt. As you get closer and closer to maturity, you move closer and closer to the par value in that in those instruments. That reflected a reduction in accounting terms, nothing to do with cash, nothing to do with anything else, of around 286 million. So that's the effective equity component reduction of the convertible bond and the exchangeable bond. In addition to that, there was about 378 million reduction in NAV, which was reflected in the 15% devaluation of the rand versus the pound. And that really reflects the value in rand of the Brait convertible bond. On the right-hand side, the other costs, or operating costs, interest costs, reflective of about just under 600 million of that number. The RCF of that was 223, the convertible bond around 200, the exchangeable bond just under 150 million. The combination of those three was about 570 million rand. Obviously, going forward, there will be no RCF interest incurred, or very limited RCF interest incurred, if any, which is due to the fact that we've now repaid the full RCF. In addition to that, there was operating costs, both the manager's cost, the cost of running the company, and also some expenses with respect to raising capital within Virgin, which needed to be picked up in Brait. So overall, if you look at it, the impact of the realizations, broadly flat, down 194, The impact of the unrealized movements, again, largely flat across the three assets. The biggest movement over the last 12 months really has been reflected in the accounting and FX impact, and really the interest costs of running the business. So with that, I'll just hand over to Sabelo to run through a bit more detail on the portfolio changes.
Thanks, Peter, and good morning all. Starting with slide 9, which sets out movement in balance sheet positions for the financial year, to note at the outset that the peer groups for Virgin Active and New Look remain unchanged. Premier's carrying value at reporting date reduced by 5.6 billion rand. 4.5 billion thereof relates to proceeds comprising 3.6 billion received at the time of the listing and 900 million received in November from the distribution to shareholders. Following its listing on the main board of the JSE, Premier is valued at its closing JSE price of 60 Rand per share, which equates to an implied EV/LTM EBITDA multiple of 6.1 times. Virgin Active's Rand carrying value has increased by 763 million and is valued on a 2-year forward sustainable EBITDA estimate of £121 million, which includes £3 million EBITDA from the Real Foods acquisition but completed in the current financial year. The 2-year forward valuation multiple of 9 times remains unchanged. Net debt of £476 million includes a £22 million normalization adjustment for cost deferred during lockdown period. New Look's carrying value reflects a £259 million increase, largely due to rates pro rata £9.1 million investment made in September 22 to purchase commitments under the HSBC operating facility. Maintainable EBITDA is based on a sustainable level of £55 million. A spot multiple of 5 times represents a 49% discount to the peer group's average multiple of 9.8 times. Net debt of £38 million includes £19 million normalization adjustment for deferred costs during lockdown period, and Brait's equity participation in New Look is 17.2%. The £400 million decrease in the carrying value of other investments is mainly due to the realization of Brait 4's investment in Consol. The remaining carrying value relates to a legacy private equity fund investment. As stated earlier by Pete, the increase in cash of £3.5 billion is due to the proceeds received from the listing of Premier. Now turning to page 10, the liability movements were driven by the BML RCF, which reflects a decrease of £424 million for the year, consisting of net repayments from the Premier distribution and Consol proceeds, offset by drawdowns and accrued interest. £286 million of IFRS accounting charges, representing the tick-up in value of the team liability component for the exchangeable and convertible bond. Coupons of £350 million for the year on the two issued bonds, and £378 million translation impact on the rand carrying value of the 2024 convertible bond. The presentation change referenced in slide 11 has had no impact on Brait's key reporting metric of NAV per share of R7.06 and its comparative R8.37 for FY22. The prior year reported financial statements included Brait's consolidated results for the 6-month period ended 30 September 2021. The issuance of the BRH exchangeable bonds was the primary driver for the change in Brait's investment entity status. This resulted in the exemption from consolidation on a prospective basis for Brait from 1 October 2021 on. In accordance with IFRS 10, given that the investment entity status of BIH applied for the entire reported period, Brait's FY23 and comparative FY22 financial statements are presented on a standalone basis. This change in presentation has had no impact in Brait's key reporting metric of NAV per share. The financial results include enhanced disclosures to illustrate the group position. Slide 12 analyzes Brait's liquidity and debt and is set out on a consolidated basis. The net proceeds received from Premier's listing resulted in Brait's cash balance of 3.6 billion rand and available liquidity at reporting date of 4.1 billion rand, including the available facility. Post-balance sheet date liquidity was 1.4 billion rand as a result of the full settlement of the drawn balance of 2.1 billion on the RCF, an equity subscription into Virgin Active, and a limit adjustment of 100 million to the amended BML RCF facility. The amended BML RCF has a term to 31 March 2025 with a facility commitment of 594 million and an interest rate of JIBOR plus 2.9%. Brait is in compliance with all debt cuts. Thank you, and back to you, Peter.
Thanks, Sabelo. So let's move on to Premier, and as you know, Kobus and Fritz did a presentation, I think it was last Tuesday, and will do a far better job than I will of explaining the business. I think they did a great job. It's on the Premier website for anyone who missed it. But what I will just do is give you a very high-level view of the numbers and the progress made, as opposed to diving into detail and repeating, you know, large components of what the team said. But again, from a performance perspective, another great result out of this business. Growth of revenue of 23% year on year, largely driven by, as I mentioned, the Millbake business, both from a volume perspective, but also from a price perspective. The adjusted EBITDA, you know, year on year grew by 16%, just to over 1.7 billion, with a margin of 9.6%. And EBIT increased by 28% year on year to just under 1.3 billion rand. Importantly, as I mentioned, the ROIC in this business has increased all the way from just under 9% to 19.1%. And again, credit to management on continuing to drive, you know, that important metric in the business. From a normalized HEPS perspective, it was 552 cents per share, and that compares with the current share price of just under 59 rand a share. From a perspective of the debt, as Fritz mentioned, new debt was raised throughout in the year on better terms than the existing debt had been in place. The leverage ratio remains at 1.7%, and the team had had a voluntary debt repayment of just under 300 million 3 months after putting the facility in place. From a perspective of the year, 958 million rand was returned to shareholders during the year. In terms of the individual performances, as I mentioned, Millbake was the key driver of the business, up 25% year on year. 24% of that was the increase in price over the year, which we started to see come down, which is a very big positive. And 1% was volume growth. So not despite the large increases in prices that had been forced through by commodity price increases, the business continued to grow volumes, both in the informal and formal space. From an EBITDA perspective, the EBITDA in this business was up 17% from just under 1.4 billion to just over 1.6 billion. And again, from a margin perspective, it retained a margin of 11%. Really, the Millbake business, the growth was driven by increased operational efficiencies and remaining as the lowest cost producer, not just in terms of being the lowest cost producer, but the most efficient, and obviously with a focus on the quality of the product as well. The Pretoria Bakery was fully commissioned, but only came into the numbers in September 22. So some of the benefits of that commissioning will only be seen in this calendar or this financial year. But that major step up really has increased the quality of the product, but also our ability to compete in the inland part, where we see and continue to see our market share increase. There's been route to market optimization and fleet efficiencies throughout the year. And all of those component parts have continued to see us drive EBITDA in the right direction in the business. From the baking perspective, there was an acquisition of the Otaniqua Bakery, which filled in one of the parts of the puzzle that we didn't command great market share in down in the Western Cape. That's been very successfully integrated and has continued to grow our market share in that part of the world. From a milling perspective, our focus is the business remains on wheat flour milling capacity. And from a capital expenditure perspective, we continue to look at places where we can invest capital to get better operating facilities. And one of those is planned for the Eswatini mill, which will be completed by halfway through this calendar year. In terms of the other businesses, again, the groceries and international businesses, revenues across the three key parts of that business up 15%, which is a decent performance. EBITDA was up 3%. And the reason it was slightly lower than the Millbake business was largely driven by the Mozambican business CIM, which I'll touch on. From the sugar confectionery perspective, that delivered an encouraging performance. Both revenues and EBITDAs were up year on year. The Mr. Sweet business actually performed much better than our own confectionery business, and it was fully integrated. And I think the focus now remains on site optimization and functionality to improve the operational performance, not just of the Mr. Sweet business, but our own business as well. So it has managed to increase our offering capacity, improves our ability to sit with customers and offer private label solutions for them, and really has been a great part of the business, integrated part of the business going forward. From a HPC, home and personal care perspective, again, both the UK business and the South African business performed well. The UK business was up both from a revenue and EBITDA perspective and produced really pleasing results. And we continue to see the local operations improve. We think there could be better performance on an operational perspective from some of our facilities, and particularly around the Durban facility, and we're starting to see the benefits of that come through in this financial year. The only one that really was an outlier on the downside was the CIM business, the Mozambique business, which both revenue and EBITDA were down year on year. I think anyone who follows that market will know that consumers were under massive pressure year on year in that business. There was no 13th check paid by government, and that really is normally a driver of consumer spend over that important Christmas period. But we are starting to see foreign direct investment. I think the Total deal looks like it is gaining some traction again, and some of the donor programs have recently restarted. So we've started to see, although it's, I think, going to take some time, the benefits of that start to filter into the consumer in the Mozambican business. Overall, you know, as a very quick summary, as I mentioned, revenues up 23%, largely driven by Millbake. Adjusted EBITDA up 16%, adjusted EBIT up 28%, and net income for the year up 186%. Adjusting for some of the one-off items there, really around the not paying interest anymore on the shareholder loan that was in place, the normalized HEPS was up 23% year on year. And again, credit to the management for a fantastic result. And as I think they mentioned, both April and May have continued some of the trends that we saw in the last financial year. Just from a cash flow perspective, cash flow before working capital up 9% year on year to 1.8 billion from cash flow from operations before working capital. We continue to invest as a business in working capital. We should start to see some of that reverse as price increases come down, which will be a positive for the business. But it's always important to ensure that you have stock. So 274 million was invested in working capital. From a CapEx perspective, there's two elements to CapEx. The first was maintenance CapEx of 325 million spent during the year. The other was expansionary CapEx of just under 148 million. The total of those is 473 million spent on improving our operational efficiencies. And in terms of guidance, management has said that probably over the next 2 years, we will see somewhere in the region of 600 million, therefore thereafter dropping to 500 million, and a large component part of that revolves around the Aeroton Bakery, which we will look to upgrade. From a free cash flow conversion perspective, we're up to just under 50%, so from 44 to 50%. So free cash flow, including its expansionary capex of 855 million, was a fantastic result for the business. And as I mentioned, the debt facility was refinanced off the base of the back of those strong results. Moving over to Virgin Active. And again, Dean gave a very comprehensive presentation on this and did a lot better job than I will do. So again, I will touch on some aspects of the business, but again, I will try not to repeat what Dean said during his presentation. But overall, really there's two parts to the business. The first is the South African business. The other is the international business. And before getting into the detail, around the South African business, I think COVID impact was less pronounced in the South African business than it was in the international business. And therefore, the recovery in that has come off a slightly higher base and has probably been slower than it has in the international business. The other issues that we had around the ransomware attack, you know, largely 2 years ago, had a massive impact on the business. The IT and systems issues have now largely been resolved. Again, well done to the management team for doing that. It's been an extremely, extremely difficult period trying to operate under getting new systems back in place and running manual systems at the same time. That said, in South Africa, we continue to see consumers under pressure. I think we see it across a number of our businesses, but this is no different. And while sales have been very strong and ahead of where they were in 2019, we have seen a tick up in terminations. And again, I'll touch a bit on that during the presentation. On the international business, obviously these businesses were much more severely impacted by COVID with much more prolonged downturn in those businesses. Very pleasingly, we've seen a very sharp increase over the last year, and especially in the Italian business, but also very pleasingly in the UK business, where, you know, consumers remain also under pressure in that market. So, you know, that's been very pleasing. As I mentioned, the amend and extend on the debt really does reflect well on the fact that our international business has made a very strong recovery. We managed to agree, you know, with the majority of our lenders to extend the terms on exactly the same terms as they are today, which gives this business runway all the way to June 2027 to continue its progress. So from a South African business, the sales over the last 6 months of 127 were about 5% above 2019 levels, so pre-COVID levels, and net membership growth over those 6 months was 34,000 members, with active members on the South African business increasing to 611,000. As I mentioned, terminations remain elevated. I think it's reflective of two things. One, a lower quality of sale. Management have put some actions in place to ensure that this doesn't, you know, recur. And it really is around the sales commission structure and improving customer engagements. You know, anyone who saw the app that's just been recently listed, which really talks to engagement with our members, you know, activating a loyalty program and giving them rewards for turning up at the gym. I think that will go a long way to doing that. There's obviously the Padel initiative, which again was launched this month. I think will be a great opportunity for our investors to play in an ever-increasing sport and give opportunities to do that. There's all the stuff we did on outdoor during the course of the year, which again I think has largely paid dividends around, you know, cycling and running. And then lastly, the refurbs. We'll talk a bit about it later. But the refurbs of some of our facilities really have seen us invest in those facilities and see better results from a terminations perspective. So, yes, terminations remain elevated. Partly that we can solve through customer engagement and spending on our facilities. Part of that is due to the consumer being under pressure. And we are seeing more of our members at the end of the day churn, not because they don't want to come to gym, but because expense, it's, you know, they don't want that expense in their expense in every month. From an Italian perspective, a really unbelievable performance. Sales of 64,000, up 25%. 25% above 2019 levels, which was a great year in itself. Net membership growth of 30,000 members, which means that active members are well above the 2019 levels, pre-COVID levels, at 165,000. Sentiment remains very positive in that business. We're building on a very strong start to 23. I think there is a focus on yield, you know, what yield we can, enhancements we can make in that business. But we are starting to see the benefits of all the money that has been spent over many years in what is a fantastic franchise we have there. Talking about the UK, as I mentioned, I mean, the UK consumers are all probably as much under pressure as we are in South Africa, but we've seen a very strong sales over the last 6 months, 41,000, 13% above 2019 levels, and net membership growth of 6,000 members. Does show that there were a lot of terminations. I think it talks to a consumer that is under pressure. But overall, this business really has moved in the right direction over the last 6 months. Many times we sat here and talked about the London inner city clubs, both the residential and the inner city clubs. Both of those continue to improve month on month. We're seeing better and better, more and more people come back to the office, and that really is starting to drive London sales in the right direction. Clearly, there's a focus on reducing operating costs in the UK business, which will continue, but I do think we also need a CapEx program, a refurb and rejuvenation CapEx program, which is part of the number that I referred to earlier, if we want to continue to see increases in the UK market. From an APAC perspective, again, three different markets. We've got Thailand, we've got Australia, and we've got Singapore. Actually, Thailand has taken the longest to recover from COVID, but really the recovery is on track. We are starting to see members come back to the business. It only really opened up again at the back end of last year. Singapore has continued to have a very strong run. We've seen yield increases in that portfolio as well, which has been a positive. And even the Australian business, we are starting to see people come back to the inner city clubs, which is where we have the majority of our clubs. From a management or head office perspective, as I've mentioned before, you know, Dean has changed it to a centralized management team, so not territorial responsibilities anymore, but actually talking about global operational responsibilities. This will look at reducing central costs by up to 10 to 15 million pounds. And then obviously there's a significant focus, as we've mentioned, on quantitative capital allocation of growth projects. We need to invest for growth where tangible opportunities exist. And I think the two words there are growth and tangible. They need to be seen to be projects where we can see a very short payback period. But secondly, they need to be growth initiated. So at the end of the day, if we want to set this business up for success and list this business or unbundle it in the next 18 months, we do need to invest behind some of the growth projects that Dean and his team, you know, have put in front of the board. Again, just to give you a snap look at the various performances, this goes back over the last 12 months for each of the key territories. Group membership growth over the last 12 months of 14% is a great result. South Africa, as you see, grew from 555 to 611, up 10% over the last 12 months. You can see with all of these businesses, they have some form of cyclicality. You know, in the case of the South African business, that's more around December when people go on holiday. And if you look at the Italian business, for example, it starts now as the Italians head for the coast. And really, June, July, August are cyclical downturns in the Italian business when people go and freeze. Talking about the UK business grew at 10% from 119 to 131 as at the end of March. A very good performance by the Italian business, going from 124 at the end of April to up by 33% to 165. And even the APAC business up 22% year on year. I think those are really good results, which reflect in the following slide, you know, in terms of the operating metrics, which we cover at the board to see how the business is progressing. So the key KPIs really are these six that you see on this page. The first is revenue. Revenue is up 23% year on year and is now 9% below pre-COVID levels, 2019 levels. So the first quarter, we had £123 million of revenue, up from 100 a year before. From a yield perspective, you can see yield was up 4% that I mentioned earlier over the last year. And that's the first time we've really started to see a yield increase since COVID, where we've been actively ensuring getting new members into the business, into the clubs. From an active member perspective, up from 837 to 963 is a 15% increase. That leaves the group about 11% behind pre-COVID levels at the same time. And then from an attrition perspective, again, Dean covered this in his presentation, we're about 4% down year on year, which is a great result, and 3% down from an attrition perspective compared to pre-COVID levels. I'll talk a bit about EBITDA over the page, but obviously a very significant swing quarter on quarter, you know, if you compare it to 2021. On this page, page 24, where we talk about these are run rate EBITDA numbers, so consistently what we've showed investors before. If you go back to June 22 and you ran a run rate for the group based on actual yield at that point in time, so effectively that's your number of members times by the actual yield less your costs, that number would have been 44 million negative. As at June, there's been a £64 million swing over the last 12 months to 20 million positive. So £64 million positive swing in EBITDA run rate based on actual yield. And again, if you look at the chart below that, that same number based on a normalized yield. Obviously, yields change during the month, different promotions, et cetera. If you take a normalized yield, it's gone from negative 20 to positive 36. So a £55 million swing in EBITDA over the last 12 months. On the right-hand side at the top, we show, you know, the yields. And as I can show, as you can see there, if you compare the actual 22 yield to the March 23 yield, you'll see a 7.5% increase in the United Kingdom from 55.5 to 59.6, for example. And that really is driven less by increases in pricing, but more by the fact that our higher-yielding clubs in the form of the London clubs are starting to see more members come back to them. So that's a very big positive for us. About a 3% increase in the yield in the last 3 months in the Italian business, 16% in Australia, which again is largely reflective of people coming back to our inner city gyms, and 12% in Singapore. So again, across all of those territories, we've seen in the last quarter a relatively significant pickup in yield. And I stress, it's not all about price. It's more about the fact that our high-yielding clubs are some of the ones where the members are now coming back to. In the bottom chart, again, something similar to what we've shown you before, at the current number of members at 987 that you see at the top there, about, and the 223 budgeted costs or yield, should I say, gives you effectively the 36 that you see on the bottom right-hand chart there. And effectively what we show here is if we increase, for example, the number of members back to where we were before at 100 and we increase the yield by 2% over the next 2 years, you would get back to pretty close to the 115 million number that we use for the valuation in our valuation analysis for Virgin Active. To try and simply explain, I keep getting asked by people, is this achievable? I think it is. And what I've tried to do here is break down for people really what do you need to believe to get back to this £118 million as at March 2025. If you talk about the South African business, since December to March, we've increased the number of members at about just under 11,000 members a month, net additions, right? We've gone from 579 to 611 in the South African business. What do you need to believe to March 2025 is that we continue to grow, but at 6,000 members a month, not the 10 or 11,000 we have been increasing. If we grow at 6,000 members a month until March 2025 and the yield increases by 7% annually to get from 506 to 579, that is the basis on which the budget is built up for Virgin Active South Africa. On the right-hand side, similarly for Virgin Active International, we've increased since December at a rate of about just under 14,000 members net additions per month. So we've gone from 311 to currently 352. What do you need to believe? You need to believe that that will continue at about just over 2,000 members a month until March 2025, and that the yield will increase from £61 to £69. The biggest component part of that really talks to about a recovery in London and Australia in our inner city clubs. So it's about a 3% yield increase, the rest coming from our high-yielding clubs in London and Australia. So again, you know, rather than ask the question, is it achievable? You know, if you look at based on the historic performance and current performance, you know, we do believe that these numbers are achievable, and we look forward to continuing to grow in the right direction for this business. Moving on to New Look, again, a very credible performance. I think anyone who follows the UK fashion retail space will know it's been an extremely tough environment. And we've had very significant changes, both to management, to the operating structure, and to the capital structure over the last 3 years, all of which really have started to pay dividends, and we're starting to see the relative outperformance, both on an actual performance basis, but also relative to some of our competitors in the market. I think a very strong set of results with EBITDA up 68% year on year, and obviously we want to see and continue to see progress towards a sustainably profitable business that we can then exit over the next 18 months. There are six key priorities, which I'll touch on a couple of pages, to ensure that we can ready this business for exit. But again, just talking quickly about the revenue growth of about 2.3%. So revenue was largely flat year on year. The first quarter, so that's really the April to June quarter of last year, was definitely ahead of budget, driven by footfall and high e-commerce traffic. We saw abnormally warm weather this time last year, which delayed the transition into sort of our autumnal and winter products. That did impact performance, although the second quarter was a decent and above-budget performance. There was a solid performance in quarter three this year, which you'll remember wasn't the case last year. So it was definitely up on prior year with very strong like-for-like trading against not just last year, but also a number of our competitors. However, you know, we've continued to see consumers under pressure in the UK market, and this has resulted in a number of the competitors having a relatively high promotional view on their customer base. The management in New Look is continuing to focus on putting the right product at the right price and protecting margin. So it isn't part of wanting to play in the promotional high street game, to be honest. In terms of breaking down the 2.3% increase, retail, that's our sort of store footprint, revenues are up 5%, really driven by increased footfall into those stores. And they're very pleasingly off a very high performance of last year, which was COVID impacted, as you'll remember. The online performance, which was only down 3% year on year, was a significantly better performance, well, in line with what we had expected in the budget. So a very credible performance. EBITDA year on year was up 68%. But I think you need to reflect that in 2022's financial year, 21.5 of the 25 million of EBITDA came from government relief. Those were rate reliefs of about 19.6 million pounds and furlough support of just under 2 million pounds. So actually the comparison year on year is more akin with the 3.7 million of EBITDA growing to 42. So again, a credible increase in the EBITDA by management. Management have continued to look at the operating costs in the business. They believe there are further costs that can be taken out of the business, particularly around the distribution center and some of the central costs in the business. Talking about where the business was sort of 3 years ago, pre the 2020 restructure, you'll remember we did the CVA at the beginning of 2021. You know, where did New Look find itself at that point in time? A highly leveraged business with more than £1 billion of debt, more than 5x debt to EBITDA at that point in time. Where's the business? We have put in new money. The debt has come back to much more modest levels of less than 1x net debt to EBITDA. From a channel perspective, we really have, and when I say we, the management really have focused on turning this business into an omni-channel business. We've set up the ability to capture online growth, and we've seen that both in our own channel, but also third-party channels. A very sophisticated approach to this online transaction growth really has given us what we believe is a competitive advantage in our omni-channel business. The leadership team has changed over the last 3 years. The focus of that team really has been on product, getting the right product, the brand, and obviously the omni-channel retail experience, with a focus no longer on a global expansion, but a focus on UK and Ireland in particular. And then obviously delivering, you know, a customer-centric lifetime value approach to your members through your omni-channel retail model. So a great transition from where the business was to where it is today, which we really believe sets this business up well for a potential exit. From a product category perspective, you know, it's fully integrated, much tighter working capital controls, and we still believe that we have ongoing leadership in our core categories in ladies wear, in the 18 to 45-year-old category. From a customer focus and operational infrastructure perspective, we need to continue to focus on re-engineering the processes. The business hasn't got completely there yet. It's massive strides in the right direction, but I do think its variable rent profile, which was the CVA process we went through just over 2 years ago, really has set this business up for success. So moving on to the key priorities going forward to enable this business to be able to be sold over the next 12 months in terms of the priorities. First one is what we call friends of New Look. Those are partners that we have, Tesco being one, you know, expanding those strategic partnerships with established relationships that we already have enables you to put product in front of your customers at a much lower fixed cost and drives brand awareness. That's been phenomenally successful to date. We look forward to working with our partners at Tesco in particular to continue to grow that. From a store portfolio perspective, we need to renegotiate or exit where we don't earn the requisite profits. We are looking at those. We put all of our clubs into three categories, as you can imagine, red, amber, and green. And we need to make sure that we're investing behind those stores where it's highly profitable for the business. We need to continue to invest, you know, in those that have short payback periods, lease flexibility, and those that bring us the strong omni-channel support capabilities that they bring. So that's around the store portfolio. From a customer perspective, you know, we need to continue to spend CapEx really around things like the app and other technological advances that can drive our omni-channel customer base and success in that footprint. And that's really what we're looking to do, is very quantitatively put capital to work in that space. From a central overheads perspective, management have identified somewhere between 10 and 15 million pounds of control of costs that come out of the DC and central costs. And that should come out, you know, during the course of this financial year. From an operational efficiencies perspective, the DCs ran very, very much better this year around than they did the previous year. But we do believe, as management do, that there are some cost efficiencies that can come out of the DCs, and we'll see that come out again in the course of the next 12 months. Currently, we're looking to refinance the existing facilities to enable us then to put this business into the market and effectively sell off the front foot with a very sustainable business that has shown very significant growth over the last 2 to 3 years. Just moving quickly onto the market, and I won't touch on all of the points, but I think after a very tough COVID or sort of post-COVID, still expected to grow 4%. These are external numbers, not ours, with 12% online growth. So, you know, those people are playing well in the omni-channel product. I mean, omni-channel will continue to see outperformance, whereas where we play. We think the shift in consumer buying patterns to high-quality product at affordable prices with responsibly manufactured product are all areas where we should be the beneficiary of. And we think there's an increased focus on online, particularly in the customer base in which we play. So if you look at all of that, you know, our strong market share, we've seen growth in our market share. We are now definitively continue to be the number two in our chosen market. And we continue to target the 18 to 44-year-olds who really become the online and the go-to shoppers. So again, a very credible performance by that business, and we continue to see growth potential going forward. Moving quickly onto the valuations, again, from a valuation of Premier perspective, Premier this year we valued at the share price as it was at 30th of June, which was 60 Rand a share. It was listed at 54, so about 10 or 12% above the IPO valuation. The current target price from the three brokers who cover it, the average is 68 Rand a share, which is largely in line with where we had the valuation as at September. From Virgin Active's perspective, again, we've used a very consistent methodology. The maintainable EBITDA has increased from 113 as at September to 121. Broken down of that is 118 of that is Virgin Active, and 3 million of that is Real Foods, the Kauai business, which wasn't in the 22 number. So really the comparison is growth of 110 to 118 million year on year. The multiple has remained the same since we stepped into the chair here. As you can see, the business has got increased debt from where it was a year ago, about 100 million more. So the 454 from the 353 in 22 overall gives you a shareholder value of 612, which is less the shareholder funding of 49, gives you effectively an equity value of 563. If you compare that to the 561 of the previous year, you can see the valuation in pounds is largely flat. In terms of the carrying value of our investment, in pounds, it's down from 431 to 412, which is down 4%. Obviously, you can see a devaluation of about 14% in the rand pound, and therefore, over in a rand perspective, the valuation is up by 9% to just over 9 billion rand. As you can see, from a peer group perspective, there was a very significant rebound, probably just under 15% increase in the market cap of the peer group over the last 6 months. We've continued to keep the multiple at 9x forward. From a perspective of New Look, again, we've applied exactly the same methodology before. The maintainable EBITDA of 55 on a forward basis, again, reflective really of the 42 million that was made, plus some of the normalized for costs that can come out. It really reflects the budget for the year. Again, we've kept the multiple the same, despite a nearly 50% increase in the peer group over the last 6 months. We still have kept the EV EBITDA multiple at 5x. As you can see, the third-party net debt reduced in the business, but you will see there was an additional PIK facility. You need to net those two off. The money raised from shareholders went to repay the HSBC facility. And therefore, overall, from an equity value perspective, from a break carrying value perspective, it went from 35 to 43. But if you exclude the £9 million that went in as an equity injection, that number is effectively flat in pound terms year on year. Again, the devaluation in the rand has seen the valuation go up from 672 to 930.31. Then just finishing off, as we've talked about the Brait strategy over many months, I continue to get questions on it. I think just on the left-hand side of the dotted line, as you can see, the nine or so things that we've done over the last 3 years, from selling, you know, DGB for 470 million, the Iceland sale of 2.4 billion back in September 2020, the CVA and New Look that I referred to, and the debt restructuring that happened at that point in about November 2020. The Virgin Active restructuring that was happening at the same time around that completed in April 21. You'll then remember in about November 21, we raised 3 billion of exchangeable bonds. We managed to sell pretty much this time last year our stake in Consol for 400 million. And then from a Virgin Active perspective, broadly in May 22, you know, we raised further capital for that business. Since then, in March 23, 4.5 billion rand of proceeds from the distribution and listing of Premier. And then obviously, as I mentioned earlier in this presentation, a further capital raise for Virgin Active in May 2023. If you look cumulatively over the last 3 years, we've raised 7.8 billion rand of disposal proceeds in out of the existing portfolio, and there's still work to do on the three remaining assets. That lends us on to, you know, where to from here. I think as all investors know, we have the convertible bond maturity date at December 24. And in advance of that, what we would like to see is the New Look business being sold. We think the business is performing well. We think it's sustainably profitable with growth prospects. You know, we think that is something that we would look to do over the next 12 to 18 months to enable us then to unbundle any residual shares that we hold in Premier to our Brait shareholders. And that by introduction effectively would list the Virgin business. So yeah, lots of work still to be done. I think a lot of work has been done. We remain committed, you know, to the timetable which we set ourselves, you know, 3 years ago, you know, which was a 5-year journey to realize value from the portfolio. And hopefully we can do that during the course of the next 12 to 18 months. With that, I will hand over to any questions.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, on the conference call, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one on your touchtone phone. If you wish to remove your question, please press star and then two. We've got a question from Pierre Borski of HBK. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my question. So firstly, on the exchangeable, are you fully planning on share settling this and then making up to the extent necessary the difference through cash? Or is there a certain share price at which you'd consider fully cash settling? And then on Virgin, on slide 25, where you give the bridge to sort of your target EBITDA, obviously the numbers make sense, but just could you give some more color on the run rate that you're showing from December to now? Because I think that will be biased through sort of the January and February signups, where usually I'd assume the net adds are quite significant. So historically, how much of your annual net adds have been made up in Q1 versus the rest of the year, just to kind of get a bit of perspective on the run rate so far as is required. And then lastly, lastly on Premier, have you thought about a dividend policy there yet?
Thanks, Pierre. Look, on the exchangeable bond settlement, I mean, it will be a board decision, so there's no decisions taken on that. I mean, it can be equity settled, for example. I think what you would do is look at the time. I think if I was putting a base case together, I would say it will be equity settled. There's a reason not to equity settle it, quite frankly. And as you can see, we've shown the fully diluted impact of that is if the shares were issued to equity settle it. I mean, I don't think there's a share price at which we would say we would do it, that we wouldn't equity settle it, quite frankly. But lots can happen between now and the date of December 24 when we need to make that call. So, a long way still to go. So I'd say the base case is probably an equity settlement of that instrument, which is what we'd intended at the beginning. From a run rate perspective, you're absolutely right, Pierre. The first quarter, particularly around both businesses, right? International business and South Africa is always a strong quarter. But you can see, particularly in take the international business, we are a very, very long way ahead in terms of a run rate perspective. But, if you take June, July, August are extremely slow months. In fact, you have negative growth in your membership base as people go on freeze. So if I had to compare it to historics, I think we are well ahead of any historic measures in terms of sales and net additions growth in the first 3 months of this year. But, I think if we go back to sort of normal levels, that would be largely reflective of what's required to get us back to March 25 numbers. So even if we went back to sort of historic levels, I would suggest those run rate requirements are well within those levels. From a Premier perspective on dividends, I think the management said last week at the results presentation, a dividend will likely be paid this time next year, so the March, was that 24 year? There will be a dividend for the year. There was obviously a dividend paid out, a month or so before the listing. We were clear at the listing that there wouldn't be a dividend paid out in this year. But I would suggest, a dividend policy that, as we said in the, it's already in the prospectus, was paying out somewhere between 40 and 50% of profits is something that in time we would look to get to. It's not to say that it will happen in 2024, but progressively we would like to get to a dividend policy, around that sort of level.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Gregory Blank of GLB Trading. Please go ahead.
Hi, Peter. As usual, you've given an amazing presentation, but just a few questions I'd like to ask. You've got a short-term incentive that you've been paid of 17 million. I'd like to understand the metrics that you actually used, because, I'm looking at your NAVs come down. By all accounts, all the business have done well, but the market is really not accepting any of what you're saying. So that's my first question. The second question I'm asking, that technically you're sitting with 1.4 billion in cash. Not quite sure how you're going to reward long-suffering shareholders with that. Would that be a way of, if you believe that you're so undervalued, would you do a share buyback? Would you pay some sort of special dividend? That's always been at the forefront of trying to unlock value for shareholders. The third question is, you alluded to the last caller, that if you had to do some sort of equity settlement for that bond, it'd be very hard to when your strike price was 437 and you're trading at 337. So that's even more dilutory. I wonder if you could just comment on that, if you don't mind.
Sure, Greg, and thanks for the questions. So let's deal with your first question first. Yes, there was a short-term incentive played, significantly down year on year from previous. The three criteria, and there's lots of criteria. There's a scorecard that for the KPIs, but if I had to put them into three buckets, the first is NAV growth. The second was liquidity. And the last one is path to exit. So from an NAV growth perspective, you're absolutely right. They scored a zero, right? So there was no incentive paid for that. Liquidity, I think if you had to say to any investor what was the key risk in Brait this time last year, it was around liquidity and ensuring that we could end up, repaying the RCF, et cetera. That was one of the key KPIs. And I think obviously having raised 4.6 billion rand during the course of the year, the board took a view that, from that KPI, we could tick one of the boxes. And the last was the path to exit, so ensuring that, again, from a year ago, the assets that were in the exit lounge, which was Premier, obviously, getting that deal away. As I mentioned, one of eight companies globally that IPO'd in the first quarter of the year in pretty difficult market conditions. I think, again, the board took a view that we did a decent job in doing that. So, it really was those three criteria. Again, I don't sit on the Remco. I don't even propose to the Remco personally. So it's around the NAV growth, zero liquidity and path to exit, where I think we did a decent job. On the second question around the 1.4 billion rand, you're correct around that. There are still operating costs in the business and interest to be paid, obviously between now and let's say December 24. So we need to look at that. We have converted all of those into pounds where required, so we've fully hedged on those costs. In terms of rewarding shareholders, Greg, we can't do any return of capital to shareholders until we've repaid the convertible bond, right? I think I've been at pains to say that for the last 2-3 years. Structurally, you can't pay money past the convertible bond holders, right? So what we first need to do is use part of those proceeds, plus, let's say, a disposal of the New Look stake to settle the convertible bond, and thereafter we can unbundle the shares to shareholders. So as it currently stands, we can't use that 1.4 billion to move it past the convertible bond holders. From an equity settlement perspective, just so that you I'm sure we're all talking the same language here, but there's currently an option for the board to settle the exchangeable bond. Let's say it was out the money at 4 rand a share. I'm just picking that as a number, right, with a strike price of 437. You can settle the exchangeable bond by delivering the underlying shares to the holders of the exchangeable bond, and you would pay the difference between the 4 rand a share and the 437 in cash to make them whole. So your only debt obligation, in inverted commas, cash obligation, is the difference between the strike price at the time, the strike shares that are already under 687 million shares or whatever, and the rest is cash settled.
Okay, understand that. Thank you. Peter?
Yes?
Sorry, and just one last question, if you don't mind. When you look at you sitting with 60 million Premier shares, giving you, let's just call it a value of 3.6 billion, your current market cap at the moment is 3.3 billion, which once again, raises questions on your guys' valuation because your gyms are coming in at zero value. So, that is your big problem. If that's going to be your exit strategy in listing the gyms, and I listened very carefully to Dean's presentation of the gyms, which was quite exceptional. But at the moment, the market's not accepting your valuation. And I know we've had this problem in the past. If you'd like to comment on that.
So, Greg,
I'm getting the gyms for free.
Yeah, so look, Greg, the math's not quite right, to be honest with you. The way you need to look at it is on an enterprise value basis, right? You need to take the debt into account, right? So if you take on an enterprise value basis, okay, so take the enterprise value, take the equity value, market cap, add the debt that we've got, the convertible bond and the exchangeable bond, you get to a value, right? Take away from that the valuation of Premier, okay, at the listed price. Take away a value for New Look. Let's take our number, call it a billion odd rand. The rest, the residual number, is the valuation that is put on Virgin Active. Broadly, it reflects a multiple of around 6x EV/EBITDA for the Virgin Active business. That's what the market is telling us. It's not worth zero. It's worth 6x and not 9x. Now, I'm not going to sit here today and say my valuation's right, the market's wrong, but it's not to say it's worth zero. It's just worth less than we currently have. So I think in terms of the methodology, you need to take the enterprise value, subtract Premier, subtract the value for New Look. The residual equity value there is the value that the market is putting on Virgin Active, which rough numbers gets you to about a 6x multiple.
Okay, understand. Thanks very much, Peter.
Thank you. The next question is from Chris Logan of Opportune. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks, Peter. Thanks for a comprehensive presentation. Just if I may just ask, the uplift in ROIC at Premier from 9% to 19.1%, it's very impressive. Did you guys play a part in that, or how was it done? And then secondly, how do you view the food sector at the moment? Isn't there not an opportunity to extract value from some consolidation? I mean, you've got all these, small little companies bubbling around, sort of like lost puppies. Perhaps you'd be prepared to comment.
Yeah, so thanks, Chris. Thanks for the question. Look, I mean, the RMC has been a great performance and largely driven by management. I'm not going to sit here and take credit for it. That's not what we do. But I think together with management, you know, when we came into the seat 3 years ago, I think this business was making 900 million of EBITDA. They've grown it to 1.7 billion. At the same time as we, as shareholders, have continued to invest in this business, not just over the last 3 years, but for a very significant period of time. So I think when we sat 3 years ago, we sat with management and said, listen, we need a very quantitative approach to M&A, quantitative approach to capital allocation and CapEx, et cetera, which I think is, you know, it was absolutely bought into, you know, by the team. It wasn't like we were pushing water uphill. They've done a fantastic job. They've grown the top line. They've had a very careful view on the value of the assets and where to put money to work. So, you know, I'm not going to take the benefit of it. I think, you know, it's a collective between the shareholder and management. I think it's been a great journey, and credit, absolute credit to Kubus and the team for driving it. I mean, I'm certainly not going to take the credit for it. In terms of the consolidation question, look, there are lots of smaller businesses out there that I do think there's a merit in having a consolidation thesis around. We look at lots of them. I think the important point I've always said is it needs to be absolutely complementary to what we do. And totally, again, bought into by management. This isn't about going on a tangent and buying things because they're cheap. They need to be businesses that can be put on the lorry, load on the lorry, same cost base, take out synergies, exactly what we did with Mr. Sweet, get us into new adjacencies where we weren't before. You know, all of those good things. There are lots of opportunities there. Management continue to be very focused on looking at those, but they continue also to be very sure that you need to make a return out of synergies in these assets. You know, you can't just put non-complementary businesses on it. So are there potential opportunities out there? Absolutely, for sure. I think as a listed business now, it gives us the ability with a listed currency to look at some of the ones that we might not have looked at before. But it certainly is a very big part of, I think, the growth thesis going forward.
No, thanks a lot. Thank you. Good luck.
Thanks, Chris. Good.
Thank you very much. So we have no further questions in the queue. Would you like to manage those from the webcast?
Okay. So the first one is from SBG Securities, from Yaish. Considering the convertible and exchangeable on maturity and settlement, is it reasonable to assume an accelerated book build of Premier will be required into 2024 as opposed to unbundling to shareholders considering the cash flow requirements at the center? Should holders of the bonds should holders of the bonds not exercise the option to convert to exchange? So in answer to that question, look, I would suggest that the convertible bondholders are absolutely not going to convert. They are miles out the money. So that needs to be settled, and I think you need to put that down as a cash settlement. The equity thing will be settled, as I've just mentioned quite just now, effectively through a delivery of the shares. Whether it's in the money or not, there will be a delivery of the shares. The only difference may be if in 18 months' time is below the strike price, there may be a cash settlement number to it. Does that mean that we need to sell down some Premier shares? Well, not necessarily. As you can see, the operating costs in the business are going to be reduced very significantly, both in terms of the management fee, as you can see going forward, both in terms of the 360 million rand a share, sorry, 360 million rand interest saving on the RCF, plus the fact that we actually now have cash, which is earning an interest rate of 5, 6, 7%. So if you look at all of those and you look at the valuation of New Look, depending on where we could sell it, it may not be that we would need to sell some Premier shares. It may be. I'm not saying it won't be, but I think on balance, it may not be, in which case we would unbundle the residual shares that we hold in Premier. It may be that we would need to put a block of those on the market to sell if in 2024, and it's 18 months hence, you know, we need the cash to pay the convertible. That's what we've said all the way along. There's no difference to what we've said both leading into the listing and post the listing. Second question. VA debt to EBITDA. How should one think about reducing debt? And what is the VA management's view of the optimal debt levels before the asset can be unbundled and listed? It's absolutely the right question, Yaish. I mean, clearly, the level of debt in the business is extreme compared to a very low level of EBITDA. But let me break it to two different points. The South African business is separately financed. If you go back historically to when it was looking to list, and I'm going to go back to 2015, I think it was looking to list there with somewhere between, you know, 2.8 and 3.5 times net debt to EBITDA. If I look at the current forecasts going forward of the South African business, it broadly gets back into that range in time for the sort of time frame that we're talking about listing the business. If you talk about the international business, clearly I think that business needs a net debt to EBITDA roughly in the region of 2.5 times, I think would be at the top end. So that business needs to grow into its EBITDA. Again, if I look 2 years forward, and I'm giving those are forward-looking numbers, it gets close to that level. So, you know, it's the business, as you can see, there was a 76 million or whatever the number was, 64 million turnover and turnaround in EBITDA over the last 12 months in that business. If you continue on the current trajectory, you will get to a place where the debt levels are, you know, able to be listed. So it's not that they are miles out, but it's absolutely the right question to ask. And management are fixated on ensuring that we grow EBITDA and obviously to some extent reduce the debt in advance of any potential listing of the business. Moving on to a second set of questions from Charles at Titanium Capital. Question one, how does Brait intend to fund the settlement of the 24 convertible bonds? As I mentioned already, Charles, you know, there's cash currently of, call it, $1.5 billion. There's the new look thing, which is obviously denominated in pounds. So those two together will go a long way to settling the £150 million. And the residual, if there is any needed, would potentially come out of either the rest of the asset base or more likely a placing of a small amount of the Premier shares. Number two, VA appears significantly overborrowed with debt to EBITDA of 3.9. Which is 476 divided by your 121. Surely this inhibits VA from trading and expanding. VA seems to require capital that Brait cannot fund, especially with the redemption of convertible bonds. So again, I think it talks a bit, Charles, to the question I've just answered, that if you look going forward, yes, it will grow into that. From a South African business perspective, I think somewhere between 3.5 times is absolutely doable from a debt perspective. It was exactly where they tried to list the business before. It's a highly cash generative business. It will actually enhance returns. So I think that's a level which would be relatively comfortable. I would say it's a lower level, as I've mentioned already, in the UK, maybe somewhere between 2.5 and 3 times, which means we do need to grow into that. Look, when you look at the growth that we're talking about, the numbers that you see in those don't reflect the growth initiatives that Dean and his team are working on. There are lots of them. There's also costs that can come out of the business. All of those can surely drive the EBITDA. And look, if you're talking about cash flow going forward, we have already agreed a funding mechanism for any growth capital, which wouldn't require us to put in any material new capital. It's done again on the valuation of the business as it currently stands with different third-party investors. So, you know, there's lots of ways to be able to fund growth in that business, which could get it back to a place where it's listed and listable in 2 years' time. Fourth question. Can you provide some clarity on the thinking of the short-term incentive payouts of 17.4 million in 2023? Good effort has been expended by the investment advisor, but this is not translated into NAV value creation. How does this create alignment? I think, again, Charles, I think I've answered the question. There were three criteria which we agreed at the beginning of the year with the Remco and the board. The first was on NAV growth, which I absolutely accept wasn't achieved. The second was liquidity and ensuring we got some liquidity in to pay the nearly 3 billion rand of RCF that was going to mature. And the last was, you know, getting ourselves along the line of a path to exit, which again, I think with Consol and Premier's stakes sold, you know, has been achieved. So there were criteria which are outlaid before. Yes, it hasn't manifested itself in NAV growth, but I would attest the fact that Brait is in a better position today with not the level of debt that it had, you know, 12 months ago. And that was a criteria which the board used. Moving on to David Eberle at Salt Light Capital. Thanks for the presentation. Question one, how much of the remaining cash on hand will be used to repay the GB converts? So again, I think I've answered that question, guys. I don't need to answer it again, hopefully. Question two, can you unpack the use of proceeds from the VA 50 million equity raise and what's to come? So Dave, on that, I think we've been at pains to say, I would say at least 50% of that is what I call growth capital. Now, there's many aspects of growth capital. It could be investing in, let's give you an example, the Chelsea Club, right, which we have. It's a peppercorn lease in a great site, but we need to spend, for example, in that case, round numbers, £5 million to get it back up and running. Would we rather do that now and get the benefit of that EBITDA, which was appreciable pre-COVID, before we list the business? Of course we would, right? So that's an example of where we would. Then there's rejuvenation capex in the UK estate. I've used Wimbledon as an example. We've started that already. We see great examples of where you spend money on the estate, particularly in the UK. You can get membership engagement. You can get yield increases in those clubs and get a very, very quick payback period. And by that, I'm talking 24 months on the right clubs. So again, We think that's a good place to be spent. I would say there's 10 clubs in the UK that fit that bill. Then in addition to that, there are a couple of clubs in Italy. Italy has grown fantastically well. There's two or three new sites that Luca and his team have highlighted for us to expand into. The recent clubs that we've opened have been being filled largely in the first 12 to 18 months, which is unheard of for a gym. So we see some expansion opportunities, but those require some capital. Now, you know, of the 50, I would say more than 50% of that is for those sorts of initiatives. The rest is for things like, yes, there's liquidity, there's maintenance, capex, there's all of those good things, which is very difficult to divorce from business as usual. But that gives you some idea of the 50. As I've mentioned, any further capital required is going to be done on a third-party funded basis. Our contribution to that would be negligible, well, relatively modest. The terms of that have been agreed, and I reiterate, they are done based off the current valuation of the business. Coming to number three, there are many comments in the public domain about tire gyms and inoperable equipment during power cuts. Rightly, you're refurbing some gyms to address this. As power cuts causing churn, how many clubs are left without power during cuts? So, Dave, you're absolutely right. We've probably spent already more than 100 million, and I think the budget is for 170 million of capex to do what government should do, which is keep the lights on in our clubs, right? That money has largely been spent in capex already in the South African business. We've probably got another, and I'm guessing, don't quote me on the number here, but another 20 to 30 clubs that we need to get done. But we've made massive strides, or when I say we, Dean and the team have made massive strides over the last probably 12 months, but certainly over the last 6 months to come up with solutions here. So we continue to do that. It comes at the expense of capex, but it's just something you need to do in South Africa. You can't moan, just get on and get it done. And Dean and his team have done a great job of doing so. And the number four, over the next 2 years, are there any expected to be any further investments, generators, in club upgrades beyond the recent injection? Investments and generators. I think I've answered that question, if I'm understanding it correctly, Dave. There is more capex to be spent. As I mentioned, of 170, I think we spent just over 110 from round numbers. Don't quote me on exactly those numbers. So, yes, there is a bit more to be spent, but we're well down the track of doing so. You know, it goes to generators, inverters, all of those good things. So, yes, is the answer to that. So, those. Okay, sure. Running out of steam, yeah? Okay. On to Wallace Barnes, Stan Capital. One, can you provide the active Virgin Active membership number at the end of May, subsequent to year end? Oh, jeez. I actually don't have that number to hand, yeah, Wallace. Wallace, rough numbers, and it's about flat, to be honest, and largely driven by, as I mentioned, you start to see May, June, Italy going on freeze, and the South African business has been under pressure for the last month, probably 2 months. Right? So I would say, I don't have the numbers to hand. Slightly up to flat, it would be my best guess right now. Question two, do you believe New Look sales proceeds and available cash will be sufficient for the convertible bonds? I think I've answered that question before. I can't tell you where we will sell it, but you know, if I look at the performance of that business, if I look at the valuation multiples that other people apply to retailers in the UK, and I look to the synergies that could be taken out of this business if a trade buyer bought it, I would be massively hopeful that we'll sell it for a lot more than we hold it in our books at, but I can't give you a definitive answer. So is it going to be enough? I don't know. Together with the cash that we have, I would be hopeful that it would, but I can't be 100%, right? Nick Kricher from Signal, have you considered putting the offshore operations of Virgin up for sale? Have you received approaches to buy these operations? My gut feel tells me you'll receive a high EV EBITDA ratio by selling these operations versus listing on the JSE. So, Nick, we have had approaches for some of those businesses, probably mostly in the heart of COVID. Thank God we didn't sell them for the approaches that we had. They were done at multiples massively ahead of where we were, but the EBITDA at the time didn't reflect the value of the businesses that we have. Anyone who's been around our Italian business, our UK, particularly our London gyms, and our Australian operations knows we've got a gem here. We really do have a gem in terms of businesses. I've now visited the vast majority of our gyms, and I can credibly say they're in great locations, mostly in great shape, and I really do think selling them at a different multiple. Now, the point I would rather say is, Nick, give it to the shareholders, right? Let the shareholders decide. List the thing, and then once it's listed, the management may decide, post-listing, to sell those operations, right? But I would far rather, as ethos, give that to Brait investors through unbundling and let investors decide, right? So I don't need to get into a valuation debate. I can list it. Investors can decide to stay in or not. But at this stage, I think going to try and put those operations up for sale. We will continue to look at it. We have an advisor who's absolutely brilliant in the space, who gives us advice about what to do. My gut feel still says that keeping the assets together and unbundling them will be a better outcome for shareholders. Okay, last question. Tyler Hinsberg from Tombo Wealth. If you unbundle Virgin Active, sell New Look, and sell the rest of the Premier shares in the market, would it make sense to retain Brait's listing? No, absolutely not. What would happen is you would probably keep Virgin Active in Brait, okay, rename it Virgin Active, get rid of the manager, and then have the existing listing just become effectively an introduction for Virgin Active. So no, you wouldn't retain the Brait listing. It would become, by transition, Virgin Active. Again, thanks very much for all the questions, guys, and most importantly, the interest. We remain always, as I say, open to having any conversations with shareholders, so feel free to get a hold of us. And many thanks for taking the time.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, then that concludes today's event, and you may now disconnect.